Now that I'm older, more water has flown under the bridge, and I've lived through some of that history, and I can just about remember some of it. The reading that we've taken from Romans chapter 2, which was a little bit of a complicated reading, I think you'll agree. One of the lessons from the reading that we've got there about history is that it's important to be able to learn the lesson of history. It's important to be able to see, when we look at history, what is important and what is important to us in that. Of course, one of the difficulties that I had found when I was younger with history, one of the difficulties was that there's so much of it. And how do you sort it all out? What do you do with that amount of information? And one of the, I've now discovered, one of the regular things that people do to unscramble all of that is to use a timeline. I'm kind of looking at faces to see if anybody knows what I'm talking about at this point. Thanks, Caroline. So it's a line that says, well, that happened before that, and then after that had happened, then this happens, and you could draw it as a line and sort things out into the right order, the historical order, so that you can know where you are in time, a timeline. So we've thought that we would try and deal with the question. What is it about the Old Testament that's concerned with history? What is it in the Old Testament that we are told about the world from the point of view of history? So one of the things that we can do to unravel the large amount of information that the Old Testament contains for us is to place it into the right order on a timeline. And you may know, or you, if you don't know, you'll perhaps be surprised to find that the Bible doesn't put things in the right order in the timeline sort of a way. So the beginning of the Bible is the oldest part on our timeline. At the end of the Old Testament is near to the end, but not quite the end of the timeline. And there's some muddling up in the middle, so it's a little bit tricky to sort those things out. But one of the most surprising things, I think, that we discover when we think about the way time passes through the Old Testament is that it isn't a very long time. We are talking about 2,000 years ago to about 6,000 years ago. Conventionally, that 4,000 years of history from 6,000 years ago to 2,000 years ago is the period of history that we would draw on a line of time if we drew the timeline of the Old Testament. So it isn't very long in one way. Of course, if you're in your 20s or 30s or 40s, maybe 4,000 years of history does sound as though it's an awful long time, but in some ways, that isn't a very great amount of time. When we're talking about the history of the world, that seems quite a short span of time. And in fact, the Old Testament, as far as it records history, the Old Testament is not concerned with most of those 4,000 years in that period that it covers. It's particularly concerned with the period that starts about 2,500 years ago. Sorry, ends then, and starts about 4,500 years ago. No, 3,500 years ago. Anyway. About 1,000 years. So from, let's do it in BCs then, from 1500 BC to 500 BC, that's just 1,000 years. That's what most of these Old Testament pages are to do with. It's quite a small amount of the total sum, isn't it? So a lesson that we gather from doing that math is that God is focusing on a particular period of history. He does tell us things about things before that, a little bit about things after that. But what God is really interested in is that middle piece of the timeline that's covered by the Old Testament. And we might stop to ask the question, well, I wonder why that is. wonder why God's not very interested in the things that happened at the beginning or at the end of that period of time that happens before the New Testament starts writing its own short history. There's a particular period that God is very, very interested in, is most interested in. God is focused. I won't try and answer that question, but I'll leave that question with you for you to think about a little bit. And we'll come back and try and answer it when we've thought, instead of about time, about what's going on in society. We've said that the Bible informs us about the history of our whole world. So in societies that existed in the world, what does the Old Testament history do? Well, if we take nations, if you take ethnic groupings, in the Bible, you discover, in the history of the Bible, you discover that most of what's there is all around the history of one of the many nations of the world. And it's the nation that we were reading about when we read that section of Romans chapter 2. Have you still got it open in front of you? Verse 17 says, "And thou that art called a Jew." And it's the nation of the Jews, it's the nation of Israel, as we now call them. They've had various names through history, but it's the nation of the Jews, let's identify them in that way, that form most of what is in Old Testament history. There are other nations there. We can find in the Old Testament the nation of the Romans, the Greeks, we can find them. The Persians are there. The Babylonians are there. Some of you will know that the Assyrians and the Egyptians are there as well. And there are other nations there, nations like Media, Elam, Gog, Hattu, Ethiopia or Sudan, Libya. Certainly there are a dozen or so nations that are definitely there as the Old Testament tells the tale of world history. And yet we're left with the uneasy feeling that there are a lot of nations who've been left out in that Old Testament history. And again, there's a question for us there, isn't there? To add to the question, why is God focused on such a short period of time? We can add the question, why is God focused on such a narrow grouping of nations? And in particular, why is he really focused on only one of those? That nation, the Jewish nation, is the focus in terms of geography as well as of history. And the geography that's contained in the story of the Old Testament is the nation of Israel and the other places that were near it, round about it. So if we looked at lands, we'd find the lands of the Phoenicians, Sidon. We'd find the land of the Philistines, Philistia. We'd find the land called Canaan. We'd find the islands of Cyprus and of Crete. We'd find the islands of Tarshish, of Sheba and of Dedan. We'd find a place called Amalek, Edom, Moab, Ammon. Again, about a dozen or so places. Only of all of the places that we could name that the Old Testament doesn't bother to name. And so now we've got a third why, haven't we? Why is that? Let's think about what's being missed out of Old Testament history. Well, there's the whole of the continent of North America and South America that aren't really there. So if we think of Canada or the United States of America or Mexico, they're not there. If we come across the water nearer to home and think of Scandinavia, the Scandinavian countries, the Baltic states, they're not there in Old Testament history. If we go right down to the Pacific Rim and those countries, they're not there either, are they? Indonesia, Japan, Korea, none of those. And the great nation of China or Australasia continents are just not there. India, sub-Saharan Africa, most of Europe, not there. Most of the Middle East, not there. The Bible seems, doesn't it, from these three questions, the Bible seems to be definitely focusing. It's as though if we were interested in steam trains and we wrote the history of steam trains in Great Britain, we wouldn't have anything about buses or cars or food or diet or many other subjects. That they wouldn't be there because we've said that we're going to write a history of steam trains. And it's as though when God wrote the history of the world in the Bible, he didn't bother with so many things because he knew what he was writing the history of. And when we use the word focus, it's clear, isn't it, that God, as the historian of the Bible, has a focus and he has a history to tell which he is particularly interested in. And we ought, when we read the Old Testament, to find out what that is. Let me suggest to you, if you haven't already known this, let me suggest to you that the history of the Old Testament is written to convey God's message, and that the message that God is conveying here is that God has a plan and a purpose to save those people who he will call. We can read the history of the Old Testament as the history of God's plan of salvation working out, moving forward, going somewhere. And so, in starting with the timeline, and in looking at how God has focused, we've suggested that the evidence in the Bible is that God is moving the story of his salvation for the world forward through that time. We're only looking, because we've said we will only look at the Old Testament, we're not looking at the New Testament today, and we might or we might not find a similar story there. But let's stay with the Old Testament, and let's think now of this idea of movement, of moving forward. And let's, in our minds, go back to the beginning of time. We said that God doesn't spend much time right at the beginning because he's interested to develop his story somewhere else. But he does tell us about the beginning, doesn't he? The Bible famously starts in its first verse about the beginning of things. But what we learn in the book of Genesis, the first of the 39 Old Testament books, is that there is a part of history told. And the part of history that is told in most of the book of Genesis is the part that we call the patriarchs. The patriarchs were the ancient equivalent of the founding fathers, as we think of them in our own in Britain, in our own more recent history. The patriarchs were the characters who were there at the very beginning of the history of this nation, of this place, and of this message that God has in the Old Testament. The patriarchs form about three quarters of that first book in the Bible, the book of Genesis. So God has selected these particular people to tell his story through. In fact, those patriarchs who were very important in the book of Genesis, we realize as we go through the rest of the Bible, remain very important in the other books of the Bible. And in fact, surprisingly, and outside of our subject, they're still important when we come to the New Testament's history, and we're not going to go there, but they are there. The men Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph are there in the New Testament. And chapters like in Romans, we're in chapter 2, but in Romans chapter 4, all about Abraham. In Galatians chapter 4, all about Abraham, and chapter 3. The book of Hebrews in chapter 7, all about Abraham. The books of James and of Peter contain much information about Abraham. These men were important, but particularly out of all of the world and of all of world history, they were particularly important because of the story that God needs to tell us about his plan of salvation. And that's clear to see wherever we read about these men. So no wonder God begins his story with the focus on them. God has a spotlight and God drills down to particular people who have a particular importance to him. And then the Bible moves into the books of the Bible, the second and third, fourth and fifth and sixth books of the Bible, form a very small part of history, although they're quite a large number of pages, seven books out of the 39 books of the Old Testament form just a couple of hundred of years of history, not the thousand years that God is particularly focusing on, but a couple of hundred years that precede that, tell a story of two men. These six books tell the story of two men. The first man is Moses, second man is Joshua. And through the story of those men, we see movement. Well, we see the movement that's often described as the story of the Exodus, and that's the title of the second book of the Bible, isn't it? Exodus. It describes the story of how the people of Israel come out of Egypt. They emerge from a period of captivity. They go through the 40 years when they're wandering in the wilderness, and they arrive eventually in the land that is now called the land of Israel. It wasn't then. And they start to settle there. And that's where the story of the seventh book of the Bible ends. So it's quite a short story, but there is an immense amount of information. Although the information is selective, and although the information that is there is used by God to speak to us about how God plans to save the world, and the way that God has done that is through a small, at this stage in history, a small number of people, two people, a small distance traveled from Egypt to Israel, a small span of time, a small number of nations involved, not just the Egyptians, not just the Jews, one or two other nations, but so many are left out because they don't need to be told in the story that tells how God plans to bring salvation for the world, and how we can know that and be confident about that through the way that works out in history. And then just to say what happens in the next thousand years, which is the central thousand years that all of these pages in our Bible tell about, we can say that what happened was the judges ruled, and then the kings ruled. That's all you need to know. If you want an overview of all of those chapters, it's quite simple. If you wanted it on a timeline, we've said it's just a small thousand years. So in some ways, it's very easy, isn't it? And yet there is much that's going on, and there is much that matters in what's going on. Because God, in telling all of the things that he chooses to tell and leaving out all of the things that he chooses to leave out, is opening up for us the way God works, the way God is bringing salvation to the world. And one of the things that's interesting is to see the way that that nation, that Jewish nation, were having their constitution reorganized. Their constitution was unique in world history, in the history of any nation. The way this nation was constituted was unique. We've already suggested one of the ways in which it was unique right from the beginning. This nation was founded, it had its roots in a very identifiable place. It had its roots in Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. That's very unusual to be able to trace a nation's history precisely back like that. But it wasn't really that the nation's constitution was based in those people per se. It was that this nation's history was rooted in a covenant that God had made with those individuals named there. It was that God had made an agreement. And that agreement, of course, you guess it, haven't you, concerns God's plan of salvation for the world. And that nation was aware, as it was ruled over by its judges, Deborah, Barak, and all of the others, Samson, Jephthah, those names that are recorded in Hebrews chapter 11, New Testament, and the whole book of Judges in the Old Testament, those people were aware that their constitution was a covenantal constitution. They were based on a covenant with God, they to be God's people, God to be their God, and the history that they would be working out, living through, was a history of salvation. They were being saved to show the world how the world was being saved by this plan that God had got. And as years moved from present into past, and as history was laid down, these people could look back and see that God was working with them. And then that constitution changed. At the end of the story of Judges, when Samuel the prophet arises and the people say to Samuel, we are fed up with history. We are fed up with the way we are not like any other nation. We want to be like all the others. They're all kingdoms. They've all got kings. Why haven't we got a king? I'm making it sound as though they were complaining a lot, but you know from history as well as from your own lives that people do tend to complain a lot. That's one of the lessons of history, isn't it? And they wanted to be like the other nations for no particularly good reason, it seems. And so God listens to them. And God changes the way they are organized. And God says, okay, to their request. And so from the time of Samuel forward, the people of the Jews will no longer be living in a tribal league, where they are bound together and bound to the Abrahamic and the Mosaic covenant as the constitution that they live by. But now they would be bound to a king. And God had given them a king, and God would give them a great king. And God would show to them that he could make his plan of salvation work through this people while they were now constituted as a kingdom. Because they'd asked to be a kingdom, they'd said, we want to be a kingdom like any other nation. And God had said, okay, you will be a kingdom. Although God perhaps kept the private thought to himself, but you will never be a kingdom like any other nation, because you will be a kingdom unlike every other nation, because you will be the kingdom of God. And through the covenant that I make with your king, and I'm thinking of God's promises to David, for those of you who are aware of that part of Bible history, God said to them that through the covenant to the king, they would become a dynasty of nations based on a dynasty of kings through which God's plan of salvation would work out. And so movement is the idea that we're now looking at this, aren't we? God is moving history forward. God is developing the way he is working through people. And God is opening pages of history which display and which tell of God's plan of salvation. It is working out. Even when people try and mess it up and say, we want to be like the other nations. And God is saying, yes, but no, you're not going to be. You're never going to be like the other nation. God knows something that they don't know. God is giving them something that is more than they've asked for, because God is continuing with his plan of salvation. And then we must stop. We'll stop with the thought that that isn't quite where the Old Testament finishes. In fact, perhaps you'll know that it isn't by any means where the Old Testament finishes, because there is one more great movement that has to happen as the Old Testament comes to its close, and it's the movement from the period of the kings through the period of the prophets to the period of the New Testament. And that's a massive change. And that's a large part at the end of this 1,000 years of history that God is particularly focused upon. So remember how the Bible contains a whole series of prophets. Noah was a prophet in the Old Testament. Moses was a prophet. Samuel was a prophet. But we think, when we think of the prophets of the Bible, about the writing prophets, don't we? Those who wrote books in the Bible. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. the minor prophets, the 12 minor prophets, starting with Daniel and going through to Malachi. But that will be another story. That's not Old Testament history now. That's Old Testament prophecy, prediction of the future, confirmation that the plan of God that is definitely working out and can be seen in Old Testament history will continue to work out as we come right through into the new. And so we must stop and we must finish where we started with our reading in Romans chapter 12. It is the reading that says it's all about the Jews. Not for the Jews to say, it's all about us. Look at us. Aren't we brilliant? But for the Jews to look at themselves and say, when we look at Old Testament history, haven't we messed up? If God's plan of salvation depended on us, well, we've messed it all up. But it doesn't. God's plan of salvation depends more than anything else. It depends on God and the covenants that God has given. And the plan that God drives forward, it moves. There is movement. God ensures that things are moving. Romans chapter 2 says to us, if you want to look at the Jews, you'll see God's plan moving forward. But where you really need to look is to look at yourselves. Because God's plan of salvation is not only moving forward in history, but it's moving forward in the present. God's plan of salvation is not only moving forward in the Jews, but it's moving forward in me. It's moving forward in us. It's moving forward in each one of us. And so we can thank God for those things that he has written in the Old Testament when we read it as history, or if we read it as prophecy, or if we read it as poetry, or if we read it as any of the other ideas that you can identify there for yourselves. It is God's plan of salvation. Thank God for that.